The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Here's Bill Myers.
Good morning. 11 minutes after 6, it is Monday, the 19th of August. How are you doing this morning? How are you holding up? Yep, the DNC starts for the next 4 days as the Democratic Party decides how they're not going to transform but just burn down the rest of America. Whatever happens to be left of it. Certainly we'll be talking about that off and on for today. I think my favorite article over the entire weekend, though, was DNC attendees will have opportunities for free vasectomies and abortions, this being reported in the Daily Caller. And apparently you can even just get a vasectomy while you wait there. And look at the bright side. At least there will be fewer Democrats in the future. Maybe what we should do is just propose vasectomies and abortions for old Democrats, and then problem solved eventually. I don't know. Yes, I know. The pro-life folks would still not like hearing that. But, you know, there is a certain part of that abortion conversation. You do have to wonder why that hasn't been talked about more, because it appears that it's mostly Democrats that really want to kill their children. And so, not that you want to kill children, but on the other hand, these are people that are hoping to kill your children at some point and make their life totally forfeit, you know, in this world. So, and I don't know, maybe that's too serious and too much of a downer to talk about this morning. But at least I'll just toss that out there. This is what happens: you get a little coffee in you, and not nearly enough coffee. 770-563-3770-KMED to join in. And. And the reason I am feeling less charitable to Republicans reaching across the aisle, or, well, you know, Democrats are just like us. They're just, you know, they just have a different worldview. I can't help but think of the biggest Democratic hive mind in the state of Oregon, and that would be the city of Portland. Paul Princeton wrote me over the weekend, wrote this last night. I didn't see until I woke up this morning. And the subject of his email is, "You are safe here if you are LGBTQ. Others, well." And he starts the show off, or the email off, rather, with, "Hi, Bill. To say I am upset is an understatement. Perhaps this is relevant for Pebble in My Shoe Tuesday." No, Paul, this needs to be brought up this morning. I have a pebble in my shoe the size of Texas. Last Thursday, my daughter and granddaughter visited a Shake Shack in Portland. My son-in-law is Israeli, naturalized U.S. citizen, and my daughter is U.S. born with our Dutch heritage. My granddaughter had just attended a Jewish summer camp and was wearing a T-shirt from that event. When asked about the T-shirt by the server at a Shake Shack, now remember, folks, this is the server at Shake Shack in Portland, she proudly exclaimed that she was Jewish and Dutch and that she had just attended a Jewish summer camp. Well, this sets off the Portland, Oregon Shake Shack server, who proceeded to berate her viciously on her ethnicity. Idiots are among us, unfortunately, and the clueless are the noisiest. But what is most upsetting is that the entire Shake Shack shop was listening in on the exchange. But nobody, absolutely nobody, including the manager, who avoided eye contact at all costs, came to the aid of the dear, innocent 8-year-old child and her mother. Cowards all. As they left the establishment, this human excrement proceeded to screech, "Free Palestine," virtue signaling at its best. Needless to say that my granddaughter was very upset. As they stood at a crosswalk waiting to safely cross, my daughter tried to calm my granddaughter down. Two hoodies standing next to them overheard the conversation and proceeded to shove my daughter into the oncoming traffic. Just another day in the big city, home of the coexist bumper sticker and the "You Are Safe Here" LGBTQ stickers on stores. My son-in-law's mother's parents were the sole survivors of large families who were all exterminated in the Holocaust. My granddaughter is blissfully unaware of this, and her parents struggle with how and when to present this gruesome fact. Yes, how do you present such horror? How do you present it that it makes any sense? Anti-Semitism is often thought of as a uniquely German phenomena, something that can never happen in our fair country. Well, it's here in a Shake Shack on a random street corner in Portland. And this ugliness has exploded in the past few years. Diversity, equity, and inclusion loudly touted, especially in progressive enclaves like Portland, but with notable exceptions such as sweet 8-year-old Jewish girls as it comes out. Anti-Semitism is the political canary in the coal mine, the harbinger of societal collapse. I pray we can squelch this evil tide while there is still time. You see, Paul, that's real anti-Semitism. That's real anti-Semitism. And I have to tell you, I think the people of the Shake Shack, the manager of the Shake Shack, and everybody there who said nothing should be ashamed of themselves. Of course, that person should be out of a job. You know, how dare you go to something like that? Go and berate an 8-year-old who just came back from Jewish summer camp. Free Palestine and all the rest of it. And yet, I have been concerned because I've been concerned about the definition of anti-Semitism being expanded to that anything if you speak out against an Israeli government policy. See, I don't like that either, because our government is so heavily controlled by Israeli interest, in my opinion. AIPAC's very powerful there. So there's room to be able to have conversations and have disagreements on policy with Israel without being called an anti-Semite. And you should certainly be able to go to a Shake Shack with your 8-year-old granddaughter and be able to say, hey, I just got back from Jewish summer camp here, without having someone saying, you know, free Palestine. What's wrong with you? You know, you jerk. You know, I don't even know what to say. I'm kind of so shocked about this. The first thing I would have done had I been the manager at the Shake Shack is I would have kicked the ass of that worker. I said, get out of here. I don't ever want to see you. You're gone. And by the way, go ahead and call. I'd be happy to give a recommendation. Don't hire this piece of crap. Nothing happens till people get sued and people get fired. I got to tell you. It's just astounding. It's astounding to me, you know, how we've gotten to this point. An 8-year-old? You're beating up on an 8-year-old? 770-5633. We could talk about that if you want. Another big news over the weekend was how that storm ended up coming in on Saturday. My gosh, we had a half inch of rain or more Saturday afternoon. The wind was pretty heavy. I didn't think it was all that big of a deal. I mean, it was just lots of rain, but it's all it was in my neighborhood. And then I get this email from John Baer. John from Medford reporting local tornado damage in Phoenix. Step-son daughter-in-law's farm just off of Carpenter Hill Road. 4 very large healthy trees were uprooted, as well as shingles stripped. Large hail up to ping pong ball size heaped up against the side of the house. It was a foot and a half deep in some places. Severe enough that it scoured paint off of some of the eaves. I've studied tornadoes for years because I do paintings of them, and my assessment is that this small tornado ranged from EF0 to EF1, and it certainly was a tornado because his nearly 3-acre grass field had the eerily familiar swirls indicative of vortices winds. As we drove down Coleman Creek Road, we saw house after house with huge trees down, one which crushed the whole side of a woman's home. Boy, I'm glad everyone's okay at your house there, John. But, yeah, I had no idea. Like I said, we just had a lot of rain at our house. But, you know, the weather forecast that we put up there was predicting the possibility of high winds. Didn't say anything about tornadoes, but, wow, that's not something which happens every day, huh? 19 minutes after 6, 770-5633. Let's go to the phones here on your mind. We got some open phones here for the next few. 19 after 6. Good morning. Hi, who's this? Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Bill. It's Francine.
Francine, how are you this morning?
Oh, I'm just raring to go.
I'll bet you are. By the way, I have to ask, given that there were high winds and the rain this weekend or the past weekend here, did the power go off yet again in Talent?
Well, it went off at 8:30 in the morning, long before the storm hit. It was out for about 2 hours, maybe an hour and a half.
Oh, it was a preemptive storm power failure.
A preemptive storm.
Okay.
Then it went out again for maybe 1 or 2 hours. I can't remember what part of the storm it was, because at that point it was like, oh, it's out again.
Yeah.
You know? It's after a while, it doesn't even, you know, what do you do? And this is...
Okay, Francine, I know what we're going to do. Now, here you are in talent, you and many other people. You're always losing your power. I'll tell you what, you know, I really feel sorry for you. How much would it cost a GoFundMe to have a big extension cord? I'll just run it from my house in East Medford. We'll just run it down to talent, you know? Whatever it takes. Okay.
I'm telling you. Well, I am a little luckier than some people because I live in a trailer on private property, but I do have some of my 12-volt lights still work, and I can still, if the power went out right now, I could still listen to you.
Well, I'm glad you're here one way or the other, but I'd like to have your power back on, though, really.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, what's happening is it's starting to become normal, which is exactly what they're going for. And this is very scary.
So you're thinking that this is the political side of we're going to get you into sustainable development, where you expect power to be like South Africa, right?
Right. And I have another call I'll make later on this week to you about evidence of the commie creep, but I don't want to go into that this morning. This affects some other people that wouldn't believe me that's what's happening to them if I told them. However, the reason I'm calling now is because the story about the 8-year-old girl.
Paul Princeton's 8-year-old granddaughter up in Portland.
Right. And my comment is not specifically about her, because no, we shouldn't even have to say how insanely ignorant and what a bully and blah, blah, blah for, you know, to pick on a child. But
before you get there, though, the only way that you take care of bullies like that is that, frankly, you got to smack them upside the head back.
Here's some of my thoughts.
You got to punch him back.
Okay. Here are some of my thoughts. First of all, when people attack, you know, a Jewish child, a Jewish person, you know, verbally in a public place for no reason, you know, just out of the blue, throw back at them, oh, you must be a Nazi, you know. Obviously, oh, how many pictures of Hitler do you have in your bedroom? You know, things like that. I'm serious.
Okay.
But here's another one I had that came to me this weekend. Okay, you have all these people that are, you know, the abortion rights people, and a lot of them are pushing the full-term abortion. It's up to the mother if she wants to do that, blah, blah, blah.
That's right.
Well, next time that we come across people that are, you know, demonstrating for abortion rights, everybody bring an old wire coat hanger, and you walk up to all of these people and say, hey, your mother just called. She decided she wants to abort you. Come around behind the building. We'll take care of this.
That would be certainly starting some interesting conversations, wouldn't it?
Oh boy! I mean, I'm just so sick of the way of that they can be, as you know, damaging and rude and crude and horrible in the things that they say, and we never push back. And I'm so tired of us never pushing back. You've heard me go on to this before. Mm-hmm. We take it like, because we're such nicer people, you know, more gentle, more, you know,
here's the issue that I think we have to come to grips with here is that you can be respectful and calm with people who are calm and respectful. And I think that part of that principle is getting lost in today. And
totally
you have Republicans that, especially Republicans that, of course, are invested in the system, have a lot to lose, and so they figure that, and rightly so, they would probably be held to a different standard. That's one of the biggest challenges that you run into.
Yeah.
But, you know, responding to violence with, I'm just going to sit there and talk about my principles is the way you just end up dead. Eventually,
well, you
end up dead.
I had a really good conversation with Judy Beals yesterday. Lovely, lovely woman. And, she and I both agree that the problem with the conservatives trying to get their point across to people is we just talk them to death. We're trying to explain everything, and because we're really into the truth. We're into being honest, not just, you know, slap you upside the head and tell you what a jerk you are. And so because we're more respectful and all that, we lose people. They just, you know, their eyes glaze over and they just walk away. Like, you know, we need to stop approaching things that way. We need to be in your face, and we need to have, you know, come up with short, hard, fast ways to get people's attention and make a point.
Well, first off, the first point to make is No. No is a very powerful word. And Republicans don't use it nearly enough. In other words, I want to talk you to death. So you, the insane liberal, the insane communist there who's beating up on the 8-year-old, you know, over her being Jewish. Right. You know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to talk you to death over why this is a bad thing. It's like, no, punch you in the face. OK, that's that's where it needs to go. Honestly.
Yeah, we don't actually have to punch them, but you know what I mean. We need to hit them hard.
Oh, sometimes you do need to punch them in the face, though. Frankly, the whiny Shake Shack person should have had her face punched, okay?
Well, or she should have had beverages thrown on her or something.
Mm-hmm.
Something.
Yeah.
I mean, or people waiting for her when she leaves work. You know what I mean?
Okay, fair enough. I appreciate the call, and thank you for that. Yeah, I mean, normally it's just like, you know, you're beating up on a kid. You grab the person, you punch them. That's what people do. And you know something? I'd like to be on the jury of that trial. When you assaulted me, he did violence to me. Good morning. Hi, KMED, KCMD, or KBXE.
This is Minor Dave.
Yeah, Dave, what's up?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I was listening to the Bill Cunningham show last night, and a guy from Chicago was talking about how they're building a fortress around the Democratic Party because they expect this to happen in 1968 at the Democratic
Party. Yeah, I don't think it's going to be 1968. No, I don't think so. I disagree.
I don't think so either, because they're putting up 8-foot walls, putting in concrete bunkers, and they're not going to let you in there.
Well, you know, the thing is, though, that walls work really great if you're at the DNC, but they're horrible, though, on the border, according to the same group. Okay.
Yeah. Now, for that 8-year-old girl, somebody needs to do something about that. and I say, Jesus was an Arab. He was Hebrew. And we as Christians should recognize that, Semitism means they're Arab, and then Muslims are Arab, Christians can be Arab, and Jews can be Arab, and that we shouldn't go by race, we shouldn't go by religion, we should just learn to have harmony together.
Yeah, okay, well, you can have harmony together with people who are harmonious, okay? And this is what I'm getting at, though. When it comes right now, you know, going back to the conversation of the Shake Shack, once the Shake Shack starts berating the 8-year-old, don't you just smack the person at that point, honestly?
Well, or dump a pot of coffee on him.
Because, I mean, you know, you essentially have, your blue-haired prog assaulting an 8-year-old inside the business, and the business manager does nothing about it, right?
Oh, man, I'd have fired her. And I would have made sure she bounced off her head out the
no,
door.
No, but what I'm saying is that goes beyond, you know, the person might as well have grabbed the little girl and picked her up and started shaking her. And so it's like, they're when someone's doing that, to me, you need a physical correction because you're behaving like an animal. An animal needs a correction. And so someone like that at the Shake Shack in Portland deserves a physical correction, even if it's a slap on the face.
Or, you know, maybe been over and paddled.
Well, that's what the Shake Shack person really needed was paddling, probably at a younger age, okay? Thanks for that. Let me go to line 3. Hi, KMED, KBXG, who's this? Hello? Hey. Okay, going once, going twice. You got to listen to the phone, not the radio. It's 629 on KMED.
Looking for reliable roofing experts? Turn to the family-owned gem of our community, Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc., your go-to for metal roofing solutions, offering 25-year workmanship guarantee on all projects. New construction, re-roofing project, residential or commercial, they've got you covered. This experienced team ensures a stress-free experience from start to finish. Choose quality. Choose Stephen Westfall Roofing, Inc. for your metal roofing needs. Call today. Get an estimate tomorrow, 541-941-3736.
Is your business or personal tax return under IRS audit? Tell the IRS First Response Resolution has got it. First Response Resolution in Eagle Point, your local tax resolution experts. Visit firstresponseirs.com and talk to Zach in Eagle Point. He'll defend your rights as a taxpayer.
Are you using extension cords outside? You likely need Completed Electric Plus to install an all-weather plug where it's most convenient. Need a plug for your power equipment? Completed. Pond pump? Completed. A string of lights on your pavilion? Completed. How about a TV on the patio? Completed Electric Plus installs electric plugs quickly, expertly, and affordably with certified technicians. Specializing in residential electric jobs, call Completed Electric Plus and check those jobs off your list. Visit CompletedElectricPlus.com.
The email of the day on the Bill Myers Show, sponsored by Central Point Family Dentistry. See all they have to offer at CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com and call for an appointment. Dr. Steve Nelson and his staff are next to Mazatlan Mexican Restaurant, just off Pine in Central Point.
Hi, I'm Lamont from Orleans, and I'm on 106.7 KMED.
And by the way, you know, I forgot to mention, but Paul Princeton's email about his granddaughter being berated for being Jewish at a Shake Shack in Portland last Thursday. If that isn't an email of the day, I mean, I hate to make that an email of the day just because the email just makes me so, it makes me so sad. But it also makes me sad that I think when people cross these lines, physical corrections need to be done. And yes, I know to have slapped the server at the Shake Shack for beating up on the 8-year-old daughter. You know, doing the smear, questioning your ethnicity or whatever it is. I got to tell you, though, wouldn't it be worth it to go for an assault charge in front of a Portland jury? Okay, you slap the anti-Semitic Shake Shack server, right? You know, and it was a woman, apparently, beating up on the 8-year-old girl. What's the jury going to do? You think the jury? I don't know. Maybe the jury would rule in favor of that. I guess I would then ask, why are you doing living in Portland still? Maybe that's the next question. But on the other hand, there's that side of me that says, wait a minute. Why do we cede the territory, C-E-D-E, territory, to the communists in this country? Hello, Gene. How are you doing this morning? Welcome.
Oh, pretty good. And I was just thinking, wouldn't it have been nice during World War II if it would have been the Second American Revolution and we kept the troops at home and had them march on Washington and arrest all the socialists and communists that used to be arrested and throw them in the hoose cow and get them out of our way before they destroy us?
Yeah, it's a little late on that one, but I do recall that there were generals, I think it was Patton, and others that actually wanted to continue going on into Russia and finish the job, come to think of it, all right?
I don't know about Russia. It looks like right here would be a good place to start.
Well, these days, you could have a point there, all right? Let us talk about, we're going to shift gears here. Yeah, like I said, that anti-Semitic story out of Portland just really got me going here. We'll set that aside here for a minute. We'll pick it up in a few minutes. We're going to talk about, once again, the darling of the tech world right now, which is artificial intelligence and what it could possibly do to help detect medical conditions. Is there something that it can do besides just do deep fake political ads, which there seem to be a lot of right now? Maybe something which would actually be helpful to humanity? You never do know. We'll talk with Dr. Marshall here in just a moment about a few aspects of a company that they're involved in. Good stuff, all coming up.
Since 1938, Blue Star Gas has been serving Jackson and Josephine counties for all your residential and commercial propane needs. That's a long time and for good reason. Blue Star Gas employees live, play, and volunteer here in the Rogue Valley and truly care about their customers. As a customer, you can count on Blue Star Gas to provide excellent service for decades and generations to come. For more information, visit BlueStarGas.com. That's BlueStarGas.com.
Life's busy, and off is not an option. You need to be on the water, on the call, on the road. Life's waiting. Power on with Batteries Plus. Visit one of over 700 locations today.
Latest news brought to you by locally owned and operated Artisan Bakery Cafe in South Medford. It's a full-service cafe offering breakfast, lunch, and specialty coffees. You'll be wowed one bite at a time.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. A massive thunderstorm moved through the Pacific Northwest Saturday between 8 a.m. Saturday and 8 a.m. Sunday. The Northwest Coordination Center logged 3,379 lightning strikes in Oregon. The storm brought rain to the western portion of Oregon. Some areas saw more than an inch. Heavy winds along with hail hit the Rogue Valley area with power outages and wind damage. The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs will award $16 million in grants to help homeless and at-risk vets in Oregon. An additional $10 million will be spent in the region on two other programs that help connect vets with transitional housing and other services. Oregon's population has been shrinking, particularly in the Portland area, with most of those people being the highest earners. Eco Northwest says Multnomah County has the highest marginal tax rates in the nation. That and a perceived lack of services for the tax money paid are driving the exodus. Bill London, KMED.
Stay updated on recreational opportunities all over our region with the Outdoor Report every Friday morning just past 7 a.m. on the Bill Meyer Show. The Outdoor Report on KMED and KCMD is powered by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, your department of adventure off Vilas Road on Airway Drive.
Every carpenter wants to teach his son how to do carpentry, but daughters can build things too. So when it comes to carpentry, tools, lumber, and building materials, remember that making the right choice is very important. And the right choice for lumber and other building materials is Hughes Lumber. At Hughes Lumber, they offer the best lumber at the best prices to all builders. Hughes Lumber, serving everyone on Crater Lake Highway.
You're hearing the Bill Meyer Show on 106.3 KMED.
Dr. Marshall S. Runge is the Executive Vice President for Medical Affairs at the University of Michigan and author of Coded to Kill. Coded to Kill. Well, it's an interesting plot line there, Doc. Why don't we talk about that a little bit before we get into the AI story of the day here, too? Coded to Kill, this is about electronic medical records, right? And where that is an issue these days.
Yes. And thank you, Bill. It's great to be on the show. And, of course, I love talking about Coded to Kill. It's a novel. It's fiction, but it's not far away from what could happen. And so I've been in healthcare. I'm a doctor for my entire career. And with the advent of electronic medical records, as you know, as your audience knows, almost all of us have our medical records are out there electronically.
Yes.
And the premise of Coded to Kill is that if these are all connected, as many people think would be very powerful to look at different diseases across the country, it is possible somebody could get in there and really muck around and cause some damage, either to individuals or to the systems. And we have seen numerous, as we see at the University of Michigan, we see numerous attempts to hack into our electronic medical records. You won't believe this, but more than 5,000 attempts a day. Most of those are kind of like a robocall, but every month around 60 or 80 are really serious hacking attempts from both within the United States and overseas and all over the place. And they want to get in there because there's valuable information in electronic medical records, personal information, credit information. But the premise of this novel is that there is a group who's trying to get into a national electronic medical record to be able to both kill people and embarrass people and do everything you can imagine. So it's a novel. It's fiction. When I speak to audiences, they say, could this happen? And I say, well, I hope not. But I saw this both as a way to write something. I love fiction, and I thought it'd be entertaining, as well as to raise awareness that as we move further into technology, and artificial intelligence is one such area, there are risks. And we all need to be aware of those.
I think that what people like you and are bringing up in, and sometimes it's important to be able to look out and say, okay, we have some amazing technology here, and connect some dots and see what is the best thing that could be done with it, and also where is the downside of it? Because, you know, as you're talking about the centralized medical records or the electronic medical record keeping, wasn't this something which was really brought in under the Obamacare? A situation when Obamacare ended up being passed and implemented, wasn't that part of that whole process?
Yes. So you're right on talking about the goods and the bads of electronic medical records. And electronic medical records started before Obama was in office. But part of the Affordable Care Act was to try to connect electronic medical records. The idea being, I live in Ann Arbor, Michigan, but if I was in Portland and had some problem, medical problem, went to the hospital emergency room, was unable to answer questions, that they would be able to look at my electronic medical record from Michigan and say, oh, well, maybe this is because whatever medical problem I have. So it's a good premise, but it hasn't really yet proven the value that was anticipated. Maybe it will, maybe it won't.
Well, the part that I've noticed is that even though when I'll go to the doctor, I'll go to a hospital and there's electronic medical records, I still get the impression that they're not really talking to one another amongst all the different various departments. Is that a fair assessment, even in your experience in Michigan?
Yeah, it's absolutely accurate. And certainly, although I'm very positive about our electronic, optimistic about our electronic medical record, mm-hmm. certainly when we get records from other hospitals or other physicians' offices, they're often very incomplete. And that's the nature of trying to connect different medical records. So they don't connect very well, just in keeping with what you just said, Bill.
Is there any one standard for that, or are there multiple systems that are still trying to interface amongst various medical groups and doctors?
Well, there are many different medical records, but the one that has really grown in the last 15 years is one that's called EPIC. EPIC.
I've heard of that. Okay. All right.
It's used by approximately half of the hospitals in the United States. So very, very prominent electronic medical record.
Is the challenge with electronic medical records, and like I said, electronic medical records are being used for bad in your techno thriller, right? You know, Coded to Kill. What I'm kind of curious about, though, is if the challenge of electronic medical records is that they're kind of like a Wikipedia entry. Do you kind of get what I'm talking about?
I do.
You know how anybody can, you know, you can put up a Wikipedia entry on yourself. Let's say if I had a Bill Meyer Wikipedia entry, which there isn't one, okay, but if I did put one, then anybody can go in there and edit it after the fact and kind of turn it into whatever they want. Is that maybe one of the challenges we're facing when it comes to electronic medical records?
It's definitely a challenge. Now, it's different than Wikipedia because access is tightly controlled to electronic medical records. So unlike Wikipedia, where anybody can go in and edit, you have to somehow get in the system. Now, this is a national problem of people inappropriately looking at somebody else's medical record, particularly among people who do have access. And, for example, at the University of Michigan, if you do that, you get fired because that's just not right. But still, we have a few people that do that every year. And
are there ever bad actors that could get into a medical record, let's say, and change something in a medical record that would change the treatment of someone that could kill them? And I'm wondering if that's where you're going on Coded to Kill.
That's exactly where Coded to Kill goes.
Yeah.
That's more difficult, but I'll tell you something that's kind of interesting that I didn't know until a few years ago. There's a saying that everything is connected to everything.
Yeah.
And that's certainly true in healthcare. So as a doctor, if I write a medical order for an IV fluid, a bag of fluid that's poured into your veins, that order goes to the pharmacy. I always thought there was a pharmacist who filled it. But today, that's largely done by robots.
Really?
So. Yeah. And the robots are highly accurate. They're fast. But you could imagine, and one recurrent event in Coded to Kill is that the bad actors get in and reprogram the robots.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I want to get this book now. See, I love these kind of, kind of a whodunit, though. But you see, you're right. You're talking about, with everything working great, the artificial intelligence, in this particular case, the programming of the robot and things like that, it does a really good job, and it's very exact. It's able to count things very accurately, et cetera, et cetera. but reprogram the robot, all bets are off then, right?
Right. And you may have heard about there were some instances with cars where someone hacked into the GPS system and, you know, kind of took control of the car and made it run off the road.
Yep.
And another thing that was really got a lot of press was when Dick Cheney got a cardiac defibrillator put in.
Mm-hmm.
And it was known, and although it's gotten much less easy to do, but that a person could hack into a pacemaker or a defibrillator and reprogram it. And so with Cheney's prominence, you know, there was great concern about that.
You know, Dr. Runke, there's nothing that gives me more confidence in realizing that you have a defib implanted in your chest, and then you get the Microsoft blue screen of death during the update, you know?
Kind of like the CrowdStrike.
Exactly.
A couple of weeks ago.
Exactly. Hey, this sounds like a great plot, though. I mean, but you're looking at where high tech then intersects with privacy, intersects with crime and everything else. Well, you know, here in Southern Oregon, I don't know if you're familiar with what we've been dealing with here. At this point, it hasn't been the crime done with, you know, with high tech, but we have a big case in which a nurse is accused of having led to the death of many people by diverting fentanyl drugs and then putting the saline tap water into the into the patient's drips, and of course infecting and killing. That's what the accusation is. Just a huge big deal. Have you heard about that or kept track of that? I don't know how big of a news that made back there.
Yeah, it made it here in the Midwest. It was a blip, but I'm going to have to read more about that, because that sort of thing has happened before. And there was a really well-known case of a doctor whose name was Michael Swango, who was going from hospital to hospital and doing the same thing. This was before electronic. This was in the 80s. And he has a new home in Colorado in the Supermax prison there.
Mm.
But these things happen, and they don't happen often, but every year or two, there's a person who feels like they're a godlike figure, and they're deciding who gets to live and die, and it's a terrible thing. Even if this nurse didn't inject tap water or whatever she injected, just if you think about a cancer patient who's having terrible pain and somebody's diverting their fentanyl or their morphine and using it in other ways, I mean, that's a terrible thing for the patient, because they're sitting there suffering and
nobody understands why, right? Why is this doctor? Why is this patient suffering? We gave them a whole bunch, a whole big injection here, but they didn't get a real injection.
Right.
Those kind of things.
Right. Exactly. Mm.
Dr. Marshall S. Runge, he's the Executive Vice President for Medical Affairs at the University of Michigan, the author of his techno thriller, Coded to Kill. This sounds like fun. I like your sort of stuff. I guess I'm kind of ripped from the headlines a little bit, but it hasn't happened yet, but it could. I guess this is where you're going to with electronic medical records. You know, I wonder if at some point, philosophically about the medical records, has there been any talk about putting it on the blockchain of some sort, where there is such a tracking and ability to lock down the coding of any entry into a medical record? Has there been talk about reforming it to that? I don't know if Epic can do that or these other medical record issues.
Well, I don't know either, Bill.
You don't? Okay.
I'm far from a computer expert. I know that Epic and every other provider of electronic medical records worries about that. And so I don't know exactly what steps they've taken. Maybe if we get a chance to talk again, I'll look it up and find out.
I think I'd like to talk to you again. One thing that does concern me when I hear people talk about Epic and the medical record systems, when I've talked to medical people in the system here in Southern Oregon, the complaint that they have is that they get the feeling that they spend more time typing and entering information into the records than they do actually taking care of the patients. Is there a case to be made for that downside of electronic medical records?
That's for sure been a big downside. However, this is an area that I think AI is going to help. There's a type of AI that is called ambient AI.
Mm-hmm.
What that means is it listens to what's going on. And so we're now installing ambient AI at the University of Michigan. It's present in a number of hospitals across the country. And what it does is sits there with you and your doctor or you and your nurse, and it listens, and then it doesn't do a transcript. It actually provides a medical note.
Oh.
Instead of for example, I went for my annual checkup to my internist recently, and the poor guy in years past is like typing away furiously while we're talking, trying to keep up. And instead is able to just sit there and listen, and the note that comes out, he of course has to make sure it's correct, but it saves enormous amounts of time. And I think if there are ways that AI can help people in healthcare reduce some of the just administrative time and overhead they spend, that would be a big plus.
That does sound like that would be helpful, in which artificial intelligence is kind of summarizing the notes, and then the human looks back and say, is that really what happened? Yep, that's exactly what happened, and then signs off on it. So the clinician is able to pay attention to the patient more closely and have a good conversation without having to be typing and worrying about that thing. Oh, man, I spelled the word wrong, and then backing it up and, you know, doing all those kind of things when you're typing something in. Okay, now that makes a lot of sense. All right. Very interesting. Now, so that's some example in which you think that artificial intelligence in medical diagnosis is a pretty good thing. What about actually diagnosing patterns in patients via data? I guess there was one thing that I have notes from you, that the latest advancement in tongue color analysis for disease detection. What's going on with that? There's something quite fascinating in that right now.
Yeah, very, very interesting. So there was the New York Post wrote an article about a research paper about a week ago. And what I thought was most fascinating about it was a combination of bringing high-tech AI together with traditional Chinese medicine. And traditional Chinese medicine, as you know, has been around for thousands of years.
Sure.
And there's all this, there was a thought that the color of the tongue would indicate certain diseases. People had tried to reproduce that in previous studies, never really been able to quite get a hang of it. But when this group did their study, they looked at about 5,000 patients and found that they had a 98% correlation between the color of the tongue, and there are many shades, of course.
Yes.
And the illnesses that a person might have. And AI is a funny thing, because you don't know exactly what it's looking at. Is it drawing that conclusion solely from the color of the tongue or the shape of the papules on the little papules on your tongue, or you don't know what it is, but it's a really intriguing finding. And that, as I said, I think what really got my attention was it was combining today's technology with observations that occurred over many, many years in traditional medicine.
How fascinating. Now, I'm not being a medical person, I just read a lot of medical stories, but is there something to this then, that a particular shade of tongue does correlate quite often? Because you're saying here, what, 98% accurate in some cases for certain diseases that they were just by, you know, the camera looking at a tongue. I mean, that's pretty darn good, really. Comes right down to it.
Yeah. Well, so this study found correlations between, well, they found diabetes, that there were correlations with different GI disorders, mm-hmm. Like irritable bowel syndrome or gastritis, and some heart diseases and others. And I think the before deciding that this is the cat's meow, there'll need to be more studies, because from a population study, even though they looked at 5,000 people to train the AI module, their actual patient number was only 80. So you need to look at larger groups. And also you need to look at groups that are more heterogeneous. This was from a single population, and people's skin color and demographics and what they eat and everything that could impact the color of the tongue can be different. So that
I mean, think about that as an example. If you're dealing with someone who eats a lot of Indian food, let's say, and a lot of turmeric in their diet, right? So there might be a more of a chance for, is it, now I'm kind of colorblind, so I hope I'm not stupid when I say this, but orangish, yellowish kind of look?
Yeah, absolutely. Coffee or tea can at least temporarily change the tongue color. So lots of things might impact it.
Yeah.
But I thought it was cool, and it'll be interesting to see what the larger follow-up shows.
Okay. Well, I just hope we're getting to the point where we're not hacking into the medical records like in your latest novel, Code of the Kill, and then hacking into the AI that's prescribing your drugs over at the drugstore, too. Oh, my goodness. all sorts of ways. You know, sometimes, don't you ever wish we'd just go back to a plain old fallible human to screw up your life rather than a machine? What do you think about that, Doc?
I do.
Okay. More things to watch, but I really appreciate the take on this, and I want to get a copy of this book. I'm going to do this, Code of the Kill, because this involves the medical world. We're dealing with a big medical lawsuit down here in Southern Oregon right now, so this kind of stuff stirs the imagination. And I appreciate what you're bringing up here, because what you bring up in this case could be done. You know, there are possibilities of it. There's a case to be made from it. And then maybe your novel will help plug some of the security holes. How about that? Maybe that's the way we sell it. What do you think, huh?
That would be great. And hopefully the novel, I start out wanting to write something that would be a sort of a summer beach novel.
Uh-huh.
So hopefully it'll be entertaining to those who read it.
Well, entertaining and good stuff there. Dr. Marshall S. Runge, Executive Vice President for Medical Affairs at the University of Michigan, author of Coded to Kill. Final question I have for you, Doctor. I'll put all your information up about the book and what you're doing over at University of Michigan. But do you think that there is any, is there going to be any reversing of the centralization of everything medical into hospitals rather than individual doctors and practitioners these days? It seems like everybody's being bought up into a group in which you either get into a group or there's nothing. And people are having to, some people are just choosing to leave the medical insurance model of medical care. Do you see major changes in which there's a rejection of where the United States has been taking medicine? What do you think?
I do. I think you're correct that many different kinds of organizations, hospitals, healthcare systems, venture capitalists, Wall Street, are buying medical practices, they're buying hospitals, putting them into one big network. And you're right, there's a growing number of doctors who want to be able to practice medicine at a much lower cost, and they don't take insurance. But it is affordable because what they're doing is really good primary care. So I think we'll see a growth in that. The other thing I think we'll see a growth in is more and more care being provided outside the walls of the hospital. And I think that will also, that'll be a positive trend. So even if you have something that traditionally might have been in a hospital, if you can get the right kind of care at home, and we call it home care or medical home, you're in a better situation if you're getting that in your home than you are in a hospital. Less chance to catch other diseases.
Sure.
Less need to be woken up every hour, all night long. So I think there's some positive trends, but it is a worrisome trend that medicine seems to be aggregating. For example, United Healthcare employs about 80,000 doctors. It's the biggest employer of doctors in the United States. Hard to believe. They started out as an insurance company.
Yeah. And yet it's a little disconcerting when you have the insurance company hiring the doctor, too. Just saying.
Right.
You know,
right. And it's not just United. It's many different companies involved in healthcare.
Well, yeah. Who's the doctor actually working for? Right. Dr. Marshall S. Runge, thank you so much. Great talk. Enjoyable way to get going. And anybody that writes novels and stories that gets us thinking about this, good stuff. And I appreciate you on, and hopefully have you back at some point. Okay. Be well.
Well, thank you very much, Brian. Really enjoyed talking with you.
Yeah, and once again, the book is Coded to Kill. It's A Shade Before 7 o'clock. This is KMED, KMED HD1, Eagle Point, Medford, KBXG, Grants Pass.
Life's busy.